pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
We made it to Friday. Friday, it's finally Friday. Congratulations. It's always a sprint to the finish here. 251-343-0106 to be in touch with the show. You utilize the text line. Lots going on today. Real quick, show line up. Alabama Daily News is Todd Stacy. That's in about 30 minutes from now. We also got from the Alabama Policy Institute, Steffi Oldsmith. They got a new report out at the Alabama Policy Institute. There's just never enough money for education now, is there? Well, this is as it pertains to Alabama, but as you might expect from this program. But not really getting great results. I know this sounds like, oh, well, Jeff, you're beating a dead horse, but did you know that we spend more on education than we do anything else in this state? By a mile? So we're going to have that discussion with Stephanie in the 10 o'clock hour. And finally, we do it every Friday, our returning champion. Big day for him yesterday. State Senator Chris Elliott from Josephine will be with us. Contract review, fireworks erupt there in Montgomery over ALDOT projects. And we could get into that as the show unfolds. A lot to kind of dissect here. You may have heard yesterday, I'd encourage y'all, if you didn't listen to yesterday's program, to Governor Will Ainsworth making a, I think a, I'm hearing the same thing. We've been harping on this for the last couple of months about widening Interstate 65. That's the major north-south artery in Alabama. Over this project with merit, but probably not a priority. Highway 43, it's not really even Highway 43. It's more Highway 43/69, but it is a four-lane route, the completion of a four-lane route between Tuscaloosa and Mobile, but primarily Moundville and Thomasville. And you will have a four-lane route north-south. We'll give four-lane access, I guess, to Hale County, but they already got interstate access there. Anyway, that's the idea. It's supposed to be open up that corridor. Not a big traffic count at all. But apparently, if you are on the 65 side and you've done it publicly, you got a call from Director John Cooper of the Alabama Department of Transportation. He said, hey, really like I-65, don't you? You know that that turning lane we're putting in, or that curb we're putting in, or whatever? Yeah, you know that rebuild out? We're not going to do that anymore. You're making us look bad here. It's very strong arm, almost mafia. Look, Alabama Department of Transportation really sucks at what they do. Sorry if that hurts some of your feelings out there that work there. You're just not good. You got clever little signs when you go into the Bankhead Tunnel, fine, but you're not getting the job done. And I think that's pretty much a universal assessment from top to bottom of the state. You don't need to be playing politics. If you're not very good at transportation, then why do you think you're going to be, especially this gangster style approach to hushing your critics? It got out. Yeah. The governor's staff. This kills me. Real quick, and we'll get more to this later on the program, but I feel as if I needed to kick off here since it happened on this show. So if you listen to Ainsworth, Erica Thomas, y'all know her. She's on Sean's show quite frequently. Well, first off, let's get somebody to respond to what John Cooper had to say. This is all up on 1819 News, the lead story. You first go to the Al Knott spokesman, Tony Harris. He initially says, well, let me get back to you. And he says, hey, you better go up to the governor. This is over our head. And Gina Mayola said back to us at 1819 News, quote, Governor Ivey is the ultimate decision maker on road and bridge projects, and she is delivering exclamation point. It is like the Taylor Swiftization of the governor's office or something there, because it's just not really true, Gina. But we allow that office to exist in this fantasy land. Anyway, more on that later. First off, one thing I'd like to start out on is, have you heard about this? The Biden administration is considering a remain in Texas policy for illegal immigrants. Get a load of this. You cross into Texas, and what Abbott's been doing down there, he's been busing these illegal immigrants all over to these blue cities. And they can't handle it. They don't have the infrastructure. They don't have places to put them. They're never... they're never going to... they're never going to stop the inflow, the influx from the border, are they? And so Texas was like, well, you're not going to change our state. We're going to start sending, we're going to give these guys bus tickets to go wherever they want to go, and they wind up in these big blue cities. So can you imagine? The Biden administration is probably hearing from the mayors of Chicago, New York, Detroit, wherever. And their response is, well, and I don't even know that this is legal. We're going to make them stay in Texas. Rather than stay, do you remember the remain in Mexico policy? Well, no, we're going to initiate a remain in Texas policy. At least that's what they want to do. How's that for hypocrisy? Wouldn't want to see this happen for the sake of the state of Texas, but you would like to see it happen for the sake of politics and for the sake of, like, what? Do you think the American people are going to, like, this is just a layup in presidential politics? So if you keep it up with that, the horse race of the politics, obviously Donald Trump's going to probably win the Republican nomination. I don't know that they're going to be able to keep him off the ballot. And if they do keep him off the ballot in some states, it's going to be states that are not going to vote for Trump anyway, likely. That being said, I say two reputable polls. There was a New York Times poll a couple months ago, but more recently, a Wall Street Journal poll. I think even there's a CNN poll floating around out there that says they're tied. Joe Biden and Donald Trump are tied in a head-to-head matchup. And I have said this all along. They are tied, and it will be an Electoral College blowout for Donald J. Trump. He's got the support nailed down in the red states. It's those purple states and those blue states even where it looks like Joe Biden's leaking oil. Anyway, so, but James Carville last night on CNN said something, I do remember this. At this point in Bill Clinton's first term, remember after the 94 Republican Revolution, Clinton was underwater as well against, I guess, in the field. They had not picked Bob Dole, but we didn't think Bob Dole in 96 was going to be the nominee just yet. It's kind of a crazy field, if y'all recall, in 96. But if you remember, Clinton, a year and a half later, trounced Bob Dole in the general election. And then fast forward to 2012. Remember, 2010 was a blowout electorally, midterms, for Obama and the Democrats. That was the Tea Party wave. And then late 2011, Obama was in trouble, according to the polls. Obama was struggling against the field. The Republicans did not pick Mitt Romney yet. What happened in 2012? It was a blowout for Obama against Romney. So it's kind of interesting history there, because is this repeating itself? Are we just at a point in presidential politics where people are just kind of warming up to the idea of a Republican president? Then once the campaign gets rocking and rolling, and the low-information voter, I think there's something to this too, just not really engaged at this point. The low-information voter, who do they break for? Historically, they break for Democrats. So it's far, far from a sure thing for Donald Trump. This is kind of astute analysis from Carville, who is a smart guy, but wrong about policy. But that's what he says. He says, look, we ought to be concerned, but that doesn't mean that based on what you're seeing with the polls, it's over. What I see, though, the major difference to me between 2023/24 and 2011, 2012, and obviously 95 and 96, they didn't have a candidate. The Republicans did not settle on anybody yet. There was no heir apparent. It was still up in the air. Hadn't even got to Iowa, New Hampshire, etc. Republicans have their guy. There is a face of the Republican Party right now. It is definitive. It's not generic Republican candidate versus the incumbent. It is Donald Trump. Now, how much of this is just dissatisfaction with Joe Biden versus support for Trump? And the other aspect of this, you didn't have a generic Republican candidate under four rounds of indictments either. So why is it Biden performing better against a damaged candidate? Why is this such a struggle? I think we all know the answer to that. I mean, Biden's a pretty flawed candidate, too. So this is unique in that sense. It's a very unique time to be exact, but it's just because there is a there's case history here to show that just because of what the polls say, especially about a Democrat incumbent, not necessarily true. Now, let's go back to, obviously, who was the Democrat president before Clinton was Carter. If you want to compare it to that, it was a blowout for Reagan. But I don't know if we're quite to the point where we can say Reagan, Trump are on parallel tracks, 1979-80 to 2023-24. We'll see. Okay, again, breaking here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Son, you don't have to fight to be a man. There's someone for everyone.
Spend my dollar parking hard underneath the mountain moonlight. Hold her up tight. Make a little loving. A little turn of loving on a Mason-Dixon line.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Be excited for Alabama, Texas tomorrow. Me too. I can hear it in your reactions. Ought to be a great game for the Longhorns. 251-343-0106. That is the Ascension Technologies text line. Want to be in touch with the program. Let's see what we got here. Oh, yeah, let's listen to the guys in the last hour talk about Jimmy Buffett. I've seen him twice, but the one I remember most, and plus, trust me, there's a lot of dead brain cells left behind at these Jimmy Buffett concerts for me. Lakewood Amphitheater, Atlanta, Georgia. Maybe 96 or something. That was what sticks out in my memory, I think. I'm sure there's one other one. But it was either a sophomore or junior at Auburn University, and that was just happened to be the venue that was it was a close venue. But there's my contribution to the Jimmy Buffett stuff. Let's see here, Dirt Digger Democrat run Sanctuary City's got government money, so where did they spend it all? The money they were now migrants need temporary shelter and help till we could send them back to the country they came from. What I don't understand is why aren't these guys being stopped at the border? We have these border guards. We have borders and customs. We have all this infrastructure. They get to the border and you tell them, no, you can't come in. Go home. Is that overly simplistic on my part? Like, what am I missing here? What is, your old border policy, you just got to enforce the border. We're not allowed to enforce the border anymore. It's not really working out well. I mean, wait until there's an unemployment problem. I think the reason why this isn't really resonating as much right now is because there's a labor shortage. Now, why is there a labor shortage? Well, we give out freebies at the federal level, and people just don't want to work. But there's a labor shortage. Big business. It's just like they need to import an underclass. Pete, elections weren't rigged in the 1990s. They just use that idiot Perot to split the vote. I thought that was more of a phenomenon in the 90s, the 92 election with Bush, Perot, and Clinton, more than it was in 96. Look, Republicans blew an opportunity in 96, Pete. Now, I think in the case of this comparison, look, everybody's talking about what happened in 2020, and they changed the rules of the game. They moved the goalpost. They may move the goalpost this time around somewhat, but they're not going to – look, it's not going to be that easy. It was kind of a blindside to Republicans in 2020. Democrats got a freebie. Look, they changed – just stick with me on this. They changed the rules of the game. They used all this COVID nonsense to steal a presidential election. I don't know that it was necessarily done illegally, but they abused the law or they abused emergency powers in some states to give Joe Biden the Electoral College. But guys, if y'all recall, it took them a couple of weeks to finally call that race for Joe Biden. So consider this.
Much more than this.
They rigged the game, the rules of the game, to their advantage, and they still just barely pulled it off.
Yes, there were times.
All right, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Borst Show on FM Talk 106.5.
More than I could chew. But to it all. And there was doubt.
to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Friday morning. 251-343-0106. Coming up in about an hour from the Alabama Policy Institute, Stephanie Holden Smith. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, State Senator Chris Elliott, our returning champion, joining us now. We do this about this time every week. I'm pleased to be joined by, from Capital Journal and Alabama Daily News, Todd. Stacy, Todd, good morning. How are you?
I'm great, Jeff. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. Thanks for making time for us. We always appreciate it. Well, let's start here. I guess the big story to me, contract review yesterday. And I saw your story up on your newsletter this morning. And it seemed a little unprecedented, but boy, this West Alabama corridor has really become a hot button issue, hasn't it?
It has, and you know, we all expected that to be be a big issue going into contract review. Of course, this was probably, well, without a doubt, the biggest contract review meeting of the year, right before the end of the fiscal year and the start of a new fiscal year. That's when all the agencies are trying to kind of get their contracts in. So, I mean, the meeting lasted like 2.5 hours. It's just, that's not really normal. But everybody was sort of waiting for this, the Department of Transportation contract to come up, specifically the, I think it's $87 million or $78 million for, to do some, the engineering contract for that West Alabama corridor, Highway 43. Obviously, there are some state lawmakers that have problems with it, Chris Elliott being chief among them. And what he was trying to get answers on is like, how much is this going to cost total, right? Like, soup to nuts, start to finish, how much is the state going to actually spend on this project? And the Department of Transportation couldn't really say. It's a little bit of a moving target, and there's some technical reasons why, and you know, just to be fair to them. But that's the kind of, when you don't have information like that, that lawmakers want to know, that's what gets you postponed. And so they held the contract. They can't cancel contracts, but they can hold them for 45 days. And so that's what happened.
Well, and interesting to me is just the England reaction and, and just kind of hearing yesterday afternoon after the meeting wrapped up, a lot of upset Democrats, particularly from the Black Belt, about what is going on, what went on a contract review yesterday.
Sure. Yeah. Chris England. So by this point in the meeting, there were only three lawmakers there. Again, it lasted 2.5 hours. It was just a kind of a marathon meeting. So you had plenty of folks there at the beginning, and folks just sort of dropped off. You only had three lawmakers there, the chairman, Dan Roberts, Senator Chris Elliott, and Representative Chris England. And obviously, you know, Chris England's from Tuscaloosa, represents part of the Black Belt, represents an area that would be benefited by this Highway 43 project. And so he said, look, if y'all are going to hold this one up, well, then I'm going to hold up every other DOT contract that helps your districts, right? Because, I mean, this is just that one project. There are plenty of other ones. And he's like, look, if y'all are going to hold this one up for the Black Belt, then I'm going to hold up every contract and delay every contract. So, you know, that's his way of pushing back and fighting back. So can't really blame him. That's the way politics works. Matter of fact, they took a break, went into the back room and just to kind of talk it out. And look, I don't think they're going to hold this contract up, the 43 contract up for 45 days. I think they'll get some answers next week from DOT and allow it to go forward. That's typically how things go. I mean, maybe you can ask Chris Elliott when he comes on the show. But that's, you know, two can play this game, right? Is what, you know, Chris England was saying. If you're going to hold up a contract that's benefiting my area, then I'm going to hold up contracts that are benefiting your areas.
Well, and I find this interesting. I guess, shouldn't DOT have had something? Elliot's been on the show. We've been talking Ainsworth and all these guys. We talked about this West Alabama corridor for a while. Should they have seen this coming? Shouldn't they have known this was going to be that kind of situation? And it did seem, at least based on the reporting I read, like they were woefully unprepared for this moment.
Maybe. I mean, I didn't get that vibe being at the meeting. They had plenty of information. So the big question, which Ames with Elliot asked very specifically, is, can we leverage federal money for this highway, right? If 43 is going to be expanded, four lanes, can we use federal money to do that instead of rebuild Alabama gas tax money? It was a very direct question, and the gentleman from ALD, Department of Transportation, basically said no. And this is something that we're going to be digging into more. He said that federal money was not part of the project. It basically said it was not possible to get federal money. I think that's pretty much in dispute, not just by Elliot, but Ainsworth as well. And so that's something that I think deserves more looking into. Can federal money, we know that federal money is not being used. The question is, can it? And ALDOT seems to think it can't or shouldn't. That's going to be a big question going forward.
Do they have a good reason for that, or was it just, we're the authorities and we don't think it can be?
His answer seemed to be like, well, it's not impossible, but it's highly improbable. Like, we've been unsuccessful at applying for these federal grants, and therefore, we don't think it's very likely that we'll be successful in the future. It wasn't like it can't be, but it's very unlikely that it could be. That was the answer. So, maybe, with more imagination or, we can't control the federal government.
Right.
We can't control the United States Department of Transportation and all their grants. And I think that was what the state guy was expressing is that's a nice idea, but we can't count on those funds. And I think what's happening is with this project, the state, from the governor on down has decided we're going to do this. We're going to, expand this highway. And to do it quickly, we're going to use rebuild money to do it, and not just rebuild money, but also leverage bonds and everything like that. So it is a very expensive project, and I think the lawmakers are valid in asking for answers specifically how much is it going to cost total, and they so far have not gotten an answer to that.
Why does it seem like, I guess my understanding of this project is being fast-tracked, right? What's the rush, or why do you think this is of such urgency, Todd?
Well, again, you'd have to ask those that are doing it.
I can speculate here. I don't know. Do you think this is like a legacy building thing that Ivy would like to have this done before her term expires? I mean, maybe that's all I could gather. If I was guessing, that would be my guess. But doesn't it seem weird? I guess the question would be that this is in such a rush.
Yeah, I think they want to get it done, and it's been described as an economic development opportunity, right? Bringing more opportunities to that West Alabama corridor. And remember, when this thing was announced a couple of years ago, there was a huge celebration up and down, 43 in West Alabama. Everybody was right. So happy about it, and this is going to be great. It wasn't until later that folks started really doubting it. So, economic development, they want to fast track it, rebuild money, but also some loans. But yeah, it's become a big issue, to include yesterday at contract review.
Are you surprised that roads and bridges have suddenly become the big thing right now? Like, we go through these phases, right? Like, it's school choice or whatever for a while. It's, it's economic incentives at the behest of the administration for a while. But we're in this phase right now where it's, we're talking a lot about highway infrastructure. And we saw a little bit of it during the Rebuild Alabama debate, but we're back in this phase again.
Well, it's a big part of what government does, right? I mean, about it when it's building roads, expanding roads, making sure they're updated and fixed. It's a big part of what government does, and especially during the summer when you've got all the beach traffic and I-65 gets clogged. That's a lot of what people talk about. And so, again, 2 years ago, everybody was celebrating the Highway 43 West Alabama corridor thing, a route from Mobile to Tuscaloosa. Then summer happens, the highway gets clogged, the interstate gets clogged, everybody starts talking about, well, we should just, wave a magic wand and expand 65. So, yeah, it's just a function of what people are talking about.
What it looks like to me is that there's somebody's pulling this stuff, right? Like, somebody's out there, probably Ainsworth or somebody, they're out there pulling this. And I mean, Ainsworth has a website set up and he's, he's very active on social media. But that, it's what everybody's talking about. But it's just because people are talking about it doesn't really drive the politics necessarily all the time, but there's something out there going on where people are responding to these issues, I think. And I don't know, where this heads, but it's always fascinating to me to watch, okay, we're really concerned about this for right now, and then it goes in these phases, it seems.
Oh, sure. And look, I mean, it's like we were talking about earlier, take school choice or take taxes or, whatever issue that state government is facing, none of that is close to home as when you get stuck on the interstate for an hour, right? Driving north to Birmingham or something like that. It's just, what are we going to do about this? Last week the governor announced some expansions, basically, south of Alabaster to Calera, about 8 miles of interstate. So what hit home for me was that that's going to cost $300 million, just that 8 miles. So imagine what the entire interstate is going to cost, right? From Huntsville to Mobile. It's a huge endeavor. And I think everybody's in agreement that we need to do it. We need to expand 65. But coming up with the money is going to be really tough. And I think that's why 43, the West Alabama corridor, has become such a big issue, is because, a lot of folks, Chris Elliott and Will Ainsworth, chief among them, feel like it could be spent better. That money could be spent better elsewhere, including on 65. So, if it costs $300 million just to build 8 miles of interstate, man, we're talking about billions for the whole project.
And do you think this, when it's all said, I do think this route will be built, but do you think it's going to, think it's going to go as planned? Do you think we're going to be in 5 years going to see the completion of the West Alabama corridor?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I guess the reason I ask that question is, There's nothing in the way that's going to stop it. I mean, what would it take? I don't know. For some reason, John Cooper is able to stave off all the demons knocking at his door, and he's held on to his job, and you know, it doesn't look like there's nothing really to, I guess the legislature could pass a law saying thou shalt not build this road, but they're not going to do that. It just looks to me like that there's not many, or despite all the criticisms, there's not much you can do here to stop it.
Right, and I think, you know, if it actually came to a vote, I think you'd probably have a lot more votes in favor of the West Alabama corridor. You know, we talk on the radio, we exist online and everything. There's a lot of, you know, voices can be loud, but a lot of people support this project, right? A lot of people want this project and have been asking for this for decades. So, no, the legislature's not going to pass a law. They wouldn't have the votes.
Right. But aside from that time, there's nothing else that can be done to stop it. Unless, you know, some hippy dippy environmental concern or something in the courts. But other than that, I don't see any other way this doesn't happen.
No, right. I mean, this has been a long time in the works. The governor, the Department of Transportation, have, you know, they've announced it. The contract for engineering has been delayed by 45 days. It may not last that long, but no, it's going forward.
Hey, Todd, we're running out of time, as we are prone to do sometimes. But before I let you go, give us a preview of what we should expect tonight on Capital Journal, and also tell folks how they can sign up for what Alabama Daily News does.
Oh, sure. It's really easy. Just go to aldailynews.com. That's the homepage. Sign up right there on the homepage. Enter your name and your email, and you'll be on the list. And, yeah, tonight we're actually talking a lot about this issue. I had Dan Roberts. He's the chairman of Contract Review, in studio to talk about not just the Department of Transportation, but a lot of the contracts that came up and why it's so important for the legislature to have review over these and really kind of shine a light on what the state is spending. So yeah, Capital Journal is tonight, 7:30 on Alabama Public Television.
Todd, as always, we appreciate it.
All right, Jeff, be good.
All right, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Then he cried just south of Nashville, and he turned that car around. He said, "This is where you get off, boy, because I'm going back to Alabama." As I stepped out of that Cadillac, I said, "Mister, many thanks." He said, "You don't have to call me Mister, Mister. The whole world called me Hank." He said,
"Welcome back to the Jeff Horst Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday morning. Text line 251-343-0106 coming up in the next hour. We'll hear from Stephanie Holtzman of the Alabama Policy Institute. They got a report out this morning talking about education funding, and like, this is you know, we just spent the last 20 minutes or so talking about roads and bridges, and well, we still spend a lot more on our school children. I don't know, state, where it puts its money, is it we're not getting a big return on our investment these days. I kind of got to wonder here, like, why don't they call David Bronner at the RSA and get him to build the West Alabama corridor and save us a few bucks? And then the state can just lease the road. They don't have to toll it. The state would pay the toll. Why don't we just do that, right? Like, we're going to do that with the state house. We're going to do, why don't we just sub everything out to the retirement systems of Alabama, and then they can, they can make money off the state, and we could be, we could just be tenants of a road. 251-343-0106. Got a bunch of texts to get to here. Dirt Digger: Biden Democrats need a new wave of government-dependent voters. Welcome open borders. Just like the military, you can't win wars. No more. Just blow up the country so we can rebuild it and have to buy more military weapons, and our military personnel pay the price. Well, on the open borders question, I think putting Alejandro Mayorkas in DHS is this is a product of that. He was an ideologue. He was a villain back in the day. He was an activist. And they put the guy who's the activist that believes in open borders as your DHS secretary. What did you think was going to happen? We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way. No.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. 6 minutes after the hour on this Friday. Friday is finally Friday morning. Ascension Technologies, text line 251-343-0106. Hour number two now underway. Coming up in about 30 minutes from the Alabama Policy Institute, we'll hear from Stephanie Holden Smith. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, State Senator Chris Elliott. Very busy time for Senator Elliott. We'll hear from him. We'll talk contract review yesterday. Let's talk about Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth's comments suggesting that John Cooper playing very aggressively in the political battlefield, if you will, on anybody who dares to criticize the Alabama Department of Transportation's priorities, or I guess by extension of that, Governor Ivey's priorities. I mean, we spent a long time on this, and maybe some of your eyes are glazing over, but just in case you haven't been keeping up with it, I kind of give you a recap here. I was thinking about this, and historically, when Todd and I were talking about it, this was first mentioned in, I want to say, Kay Ivey's, had to be 2020, I guess, State of the State address, that she was going to do this. There wasn't a plan in place. It was just, this is something I want to do. Now that I'm in, you know, talking, it's, and this is, I believe, yeah, this was before her reelection. She said, not only this West Alabama corridor, and she mentioned Thomasville to Tuscaloosa, but it's really Thomasville to Moundville, but also, as 43, what's Highway 43? You want to know where Highway 43 is? Those of you that live in like Chickasaw, Saraland, and Satsuma. So 43, it starts right there at the foot of the Africatown Bridge, and it goes directly due north from there, all the way to the Tennessee state line. It's sort of the West Alabama corridor, as they call it. But anyway, it goes to Tuscaloosa. From there, it proceeds on up north to the Shoals. And that was also mentioned in Governor Ivey's State of the State that year, that they were going to four-lane that route as well and pick up, you know, that northern, like kind of the northern frontier, northwestern frontier of Alabama. Very hilly, not very agriculture. You go up, it's Fayette County. Like, how many of you, raise your hand if you've, when's the last time you've been to Fayette, Alabama? One of these places you have to be going to. You don't necessarily go through to go anywhere. And then from there, it's going to proceed up into, 43 goes on up Marion County through Hamilton, Franklin County there through Russellville, Colbert County, where you hit the Shoals, and then Lauderdale County, Florence, and then the Tennessee state line. And it's already four-lane to the Tennessee state line to the Shoals, but she also go ahead and finish that as well. So you have this four-lane route that stretches the entirety of the western part of the state. That's her vision. Now, I don't know. She's not going to be around for that northern part, but she wants to be around, Governor Ivey, that is, wants to be around for at least the black belt part. Well, it sounded good and all. And I first started hearing about this project and the problems it was running into with the financing when Tim James ran for governor, and he did a press conference at what used to be the Admiral Sims, and they had to drop the Sims because I guess Sims is racist, and they just call it the Admiral now. He did a press conference there, and he actually had a chart up of the different traffic counts on these routes And believe it or not, there's not very much traffic on a daily basis between Thomasville, Linden, Linden, Demopolis, Demopolis. You hit the interstate from there, or you go Hale County on up to Tuscaloosa. I mean, it pales in comparison to what the traffic is on Interstate 65. It's not even close. I mean, we're talking a few thousand cars a day versus tens of thousands of cars a day. It's like, what is she doing? And it became like a kind of an issue, but really didn't realize the financing mechanism was going to be all state money. And this is where it got controversial. It's not the project itself. It's the financing of the project. And as Todd explained, it's just not, it doesn't seem that there's enough traffic there to warrant. Even the U.S. Department of Transportation is like, no, you're not spending federal money on this. It doesn't qualify. Why does it qualify? Because there's not enough traffic up and down that route to warrant this kind of infrastructure. So don't waste federal money on that. And so that's where the problem lies. That's where the struggle lies on this. And now we're starting to realize, well, you know, there's some real issues here. And I-10, not just the bridge, but if you get on I-10 between that Spanish Fort Daphne exit all the way to Pensacola, it's like driving the Indy 500. I mean, it is crammed in traffic, and you know, there's obstacles in the way. There's real needs where there's real traffic problems, and people in the state, I don't think it's just a, hey, how come you're not spending this money in my district? But it does seem like, why are we doing this out in the middle of nowhere while everybody else suffers? Like, well, what is the point we're driving home? And here it is. No one is now Mayor Stimson, Sheldon Day, Thomasville, and Mayor Maddox in Tuscaloosa. Yeah. Why isn't the governor, the one who is so dead set on this issue, speaking out more about it? Why do I get these catty little responses from her spokeswoman? Like, he. Like, what's the deal here? If Governor Ivey really wants this, she's losing in the court of public opinion. How many of you on the text line think that all of the traffic tie-ups and all the places in the state that you go to, Baldwin County, Mobile County, Escambia County, Monroe County, Washington County, wherever it is, how many of you think this is a great idea? 251-343-0106. Kind of a brief little synopsis of how this started and how we got there and why we're talking. So it's always fascinating what dominates the discussion, especially as I do a talk radio show and you watch these trends come and go. Well, it's been the summer of roads and bridges. How much longer are we going to spend on this before we move on to whatever's next? Summer Del Tony writes, they just kept counting votes in 2020 until they got enough for Biden. When Trump wanted to keep counting votes, they wanted to lock him up. Sean, couldn't get reelected in 1996 because he had the CIA blow up the Oklahoma City federal building. I don't think that is necessarily accurate. Damn Yankee. I have lived in big cities where you must plan daily events around horrendous traffic and travel. Mobile is quickly becoming similar. If you travel on I-10, this Al-Dot guy needs to wake up. The fast track of 43 is curious. Why aren't they fast tracking everything? Why aren't they fast tracking I-10? Ricky was right again. Ricky, you haven't been right in a while. I'm still waiting to die from the vaccine I took 3 years ago. Seriously. Like, I remember I took I took the Moderna shot in on my birthday, 2020. That was in April 2020. It is now September 2023. And here I am, still sitting here. Actually, that's not correct. 2021, April 2021. So it's been more than 2 years, and I haven't died yet, like you said I was going to. Tim, when do you think the American public is going to get tired of the stuff that the Democratic Party is doing and start pushing back? They are right now. I mean, I just, elections will show this. You guys tend to think elections are easily manipulated, but it does take a big concerted effort to manipulate an election. There's just too much at stake, and the system has a way of correcting itself. And I think a lot of you are expecting the worst in 2024. That they did, wow, look what they did in 2020. They're just going to double down on it. No, there's a self-correcting mechanism here. And I'll use this example, Georgia. Georgia lost the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. Remember all that controversy? But it wasn't just Georgia. The other states are doing the same thing with their election integrity. And I know it's easy to lose faith in the system. There's no reason to have a lot of confidence in government. This way you'll put government on a pedestal because it's prone to screw up. And that's such a problem with society right now. Instead of an almighty God, you're praying to an almighty government. A lot of people do. As looking for that to be the answer to your prayers, you're never going to get much satisfaction out of that. It's like these people on the left engage in this idolatry about government, and it just lets them down. So if you're going to make the seal of the United States or whatever the answer to your prayers, you're going to be really, really let down. But they are pushing back, and I don't hold, I guess I don't have much faith in government just to get it right. What do you think, that if they're really trying to rig an election, that they're going to be able to let this sail through again? Leo writes, don't forget the Gas Texas purpose was to dredge the ship channel in Mobile and to build the West Corridor. And nothing to do with repair. Oh, you mean the gas tax, not the gas tax, Texas. The gas tax was to someday we got to do a whole discussion about what Rebuild Alabama's turned out to be. And guys, if you recall in 2019 or 2018, even late 2018, after Governor Ivey's elected, there was that election cycle when she ran for governor. Remember, she had just gotten into the governor's, mansion in 2017 with the unceremonious departure of Robert Bentley. And in 18, she ran again, or she ran. She'd run for governor previously and couldn't get much support. But Kay Ivey, when she ran in that cycle, I think it was the 2010 cycle, that was a crowded field. Remember, it was Bradley Byrd, it was Tim James, it was Robert Bentley, and it was Kay Ivey. And then somewhere in the middle there, Kay Ivey said, I can't compete with these guys. I'm dropping out of the gubernatorial race, and I'm running for lieutenant governor. And that's just, she ran against Little Jim Folsom. He had won in 2006 against Luther Strange, if you recall. And she beat Folsom to become governor, I mean, lieutenant governor, and then Billy has his problems and she's governor. And then she runs at 18, and she doesn't mention a word about the gas tax. It did not start talking about Rebuild Alabama until late 2018 after the election was settled. And there's a whole discussion to be, it's fascinating. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
To get up, right? and in tears he said, Patches, I'm depending on you, son, to pull the family through. My son is on.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Friday morning, 24 minutes after the hour. So back to my narrative here about the Rebuild Alabama Act. And Governor Ivey gets reelected, and then it's like this full court press. Like you had the speaker and the majority and the minority leader. You have all these officials that are doing a tour around the state saying, we must pass this gas tax increase because you don't want kids going over on school buses going over bridges that are faulty and you know, just all of this. And it was fascinating to watch because I was, you know, you sit there thinking, well, anytime there's new money introduced into government, there's a fight over it. Like, everybody wants to get their hand, you know, on all levels, right? And you're thinking, well, you know, like, there's got to be some specifics here as to what they're going to get out of this. Well, the Faustian bargain was with the cities and the counties to get them on board, they had a lot of certain share of Rebuild Alabama money to these governments. And it's just some governments, it's just a sizable chunk, some city governments, depending on the size of your city. So anyway, that being said, all of a sudden, the League of Municipalities and the Association of County Commissioners are on board. And you're like, wow, they did not have to fight over it that we thought they were. They had settled this all in the back room. They're on board. They're backing the governor. And what it's turned out to do is you have this big sizable thing here in the Rebuild Alabama Act, but in reality, it wound up being for a bunch of small ball projects. It wound up being for, not that they don't have merit, but they're not the big vision things. They're not the big 65 expansion or 43 or I-10 bridge or whatever it is. And there's some sizable projects, but they're not the big things that are really going to impact our lives in a significant way to make our lives better. It's just things that I think a lot of localities said, well, we need to do this. And typically, guys, the localities tend to take care of these things themselves. Like, hey, well, they'll have their own gas tax or they'll raise money through whatever means, sales taxes or whatever, to come up with financing for fixing projects. But what's happened, guys, is we talk about this all the time in South Alabama, how we produce a lot more revenue for the government, but give not as much back. Rebuild Alabama is and this is so far, we are, almost 4 years into this, a giant wealth redistribution program. Take it from, it's like the government version, the gas tax version of Robin Hood. Take it from the rich and give it to the poor because you do have a lot of economic disparities around the state. How do you fix that? Do you think like Thomaston, Alabama has a big tax base to fix their four-lane intersection? Or I mean, their four-way stop intersection? No. But those guys in Baldwin County won't miss a few thousand bucks or a few hundred thousand bucks or whatever it is. Those guys in Madison County, they can afford it. And that's what it's turned out to be so far. It's not really where the people are. It's not really impacting their lives for the better. But these people in these small towns, rural Alabama, it is. And we can have a discussion about, well, they just need more help than you. Which, it's kind of weird. It pits people against people. But that's historically been the case. You go back to Wallace and the interstate system and how governors in this state have always kind of looked out for the rural counties and told the more urban places to go figure it out. You're big boys. You can take care of yourself. 251-343-0106. Be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Through those Alabama pines.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us on this Friday morning. 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the program. Utilize the text line. Still come in about an hour from now, our returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott. Busy day for our South Baldwin County representative in the Alabama Senate. We'll get into that in due course. But joining us now on the line, very pleased to be joined by my next guest. I'm so grateful that she made time for us. From the Alabama Policy Institute, Stephanie Holden-Smith is on the line with us. Stephanie, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Jeff. Good morning.
Hey, thanks for making time for us. So, guys got a report out, and a surprise. And this is just kills me because this has been kind of a reoccurring theme throughout my life. There's never enough money for education and the children, right? And there's never going to be enough. But as we have that debate, you're kind of wondering, okay, well, what are we getting out of this this back and forth here? And it turns out results aren't really as we're not really seeing that spike in quality, at least in Alabama, because as this report points out, that education budget grows. Yeah, it grows, it grows, it grows, and the results kind of not really there.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I always ask the question, okay, what does the term fully funded mean if it's not an 82% increase in the last 10 years? So, we've been spending more and more money per student and overall in the state of Alabama, especially in the last two quadrennia. And we're really not getting the results that you would expect. If the answer is put more money into public education to improve it, we're not receiving the results that you would expect to see by pumping just literally, hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars into that program.
Yeah. And you know, like we went to the era of, just the Paul Hubbard era, just where they got whatever they wanted at the education level. It doesn't look like there's much difference now that Stephanie, you've been around a while, and you know how this used to be. Like Paul Hubbard and the AEA were like the devil, you know, like, and we had to get control of this education stuff's out of control, but nothing's changed based on what I'm reading here. In this new era.
I agree. And I would make the argument, and you and I have been around a long time and know the lore, which was accurate, of Paul Hubbard kind of parting the seas when he walked down the hall or making hand signals from the gallery and telling people what to do and shaking things up on a daily basis. But I will tell you, even in that era, public employees did not have, a minimum wage that private sector employees don't have. They didn't receive a pay increase every single year. The only year since Kay Ivey's been governor that teachers and support workers haven't received a pay increase was COVID year, and that's just because they went home early. So it used to be that the first and second year of a quadrennium, they would do some policy kind of things in education, and then the third and the fourth year they would give pay raises. Now they just give pay raises every year.
Yeah, it's like every state of the state address she does, it's like recycled those that paragraph about teacher pay increases and raises, and you get the applause from everybody, it seems, but that
nobody's anti-teacher, and everybody wants teachers to be adequately paid, but there doesn't seem to be any correlation between how much we pay teachers or, more importantly, how much money we're just dumping into the education system for administrators, for support workers, for the structure of it. That aren't going into our classrooms and aren't going into teacher pay increases. We're 24th in the nation on teacher pay. And, stick around 48th in the results. And so, yeah, those two things don't add up.
Well, it's that and per pupil spending. I mean, we're not obviously not at the top of the list. We're not at the bottom of the list, but like we're not anywhere near where the results ought to be. The return on investment's just not there.
Right. Well, and it's one of those things too, which, you know, I think that we set goals for ourselves as a state, but if we were 24th in the nation in reading, we would be declaring victory, you know, and if we were 24th in the nation in math results, we would, you know, really be declaring victory. And those results are just not there for the money that the taxpayers are putting into the public education system.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I guess this gets us to like, well, what is the policy prescription here? Like, what needs to change? I mean, and clearly it's the spending is there. The money is there. Right. There's something else they're not doing here that really needs to be examined.
Right. And I will say, to give credit where credit is due, the Numeracy Act and the Literacy Act were both passed as targeted approaches to, okay, where are the deficits in our scores, you know, as far as the overall scores of the state? Where are those deficits and how can we pinpoint the problems to try to help those kids specifically and those areas of study specifically? And that was the theory behind both the Literacy Act and the Numeracy Act. The Literacy Act, you know, as you know, was, you know, they put the brakes on it and let everybody just kind of languish during the COVID era. I will say that our numbers in comparison to other states seem to have improved, but when you really dive into the numbers, what you see is that everyone else just did worse. It's not that we did better. It's that in comparison to everyone else who kept their schools closed for a year and a half or 2 years, we looked better in comparison to them. So there are a couple of things there. One is that I think that there needs to be more targeted spending, and I will give them credit. I think that that's been an attempt over the last few years instead of just using the formula and giving everybody the exact same amount, you know, or their proportional amount as to the formula. And they're trying to do some targeted approaches. But I will say that a lot of these negative results or lack of improvement in results are part of what is really fueling the push towards school choice.
Joined by Stephanie Holton-Smith of the Alabama Policy Institute here on the program, and that seems to be where this is pointing to, like school choice and making the case for that the system in place right now, it seems to be very very weighted toward educators and administrators. Is it working? And we need to look at something. We need to start thinking about this. It seems the governor and others have given overtures to that, but where do you think we are in that right now?
I think we're, you know, everybody has a different opinion about what school choice is. I mean, technically, if you look at a map of the nation and, you know, click on a map, it says Alabama has school choice because we have the AAA program and, you know, a minute charter school program. And those were both expanded. Both of those are good programs. The problem with what we have now is that they just touch such a limited number of our students statewide. And so what we really, I believe, and ABI believe, should be after is some form of universal school choice so that every single parent in the state has the ability to use a portion of their tax dollars to choose where their child or children go to school on an annual basis. And part of that is being fueled by the negative perception of the public school system in the state and nationwide. And then also part of that is being fueled by the fact that taxpayers are putting so much money into the you know, public school system, and we're just not getting the results. And that was why we put out this report, was to just illustrate that putting more money into this system is just not getting the results that we want, and it won't in the future. So where I think school choice is right now, I think that Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth has been, you know, an outspoken advocate for it over the last several years. Governor Kay Ivey came out and said that she wanted, you know, to be a leader in the school choice movement nationwide. She wanted Alabama to be a leader doing that. There's a coalition of folks that have been interested in this for years. API has advocated for this, frankly, since I was in elementary school, and I'm not a young person. So it's one of those things that has been in the works for a really long time, and I'm hopeful that we will get to a point in the next session, or maybe the session after that, that we have the ability to give parents the option to choose what is best for their child that year.
And on that school front, choice front here, now here's, this is me saying this, when I hear Governor Ivey talking, I'm skeptical. Automatically, the red flags go up when she starts talking about school choice. How do you feel about that? Are you okay with her kind of being the tip of the spear, or maybe you know, based on kind of what we've seen these last 6 years or whatever it's been that she's been in office, is it best to maybe wait till somebody else could kind of take the lead on this?
Yeah, I think that there's been, since she's been in office, there's been a national movement that has developed towards school choice. And I think that she probably sees her peers. Sarah Sanders is one. Kim Reynolds in Iowa is one. Obviously, DeSantis in Florida has been moving towards universal school choice. And actually, you know, there are 19 different states that address school choice in some form in the last legislative session. And so it's kind of become a national conversation. I think that the presidential election, they'll be talking about school choice and school choice initiatives. And it's become one of those things that's kind of moving that direction outside of the state of Alabama. And so I think I'm guessing here, I haven't talked to her personally about it, but I'm guessing that some of that national momentum is pulling her that direction. I will say I was surprised by her comments. I was pleasantly surprised. But I was surprised by her comments. And I mean, heck, if API can help her create the most conservative school choice legislation in the nation, we'd be happy to do it.
Secondly, on this whole discussion about education policy and what can be done from a policy standpoint, to me, I know every state has to deal with this. And this is the question, though, is there a cultural problem that is ailing our education in Alabama that maybe other states don't have? Maybe we have more poverty or something like that. And, sure, you know, is there always a government fix to these things? Like, philosophically, as conservatives, we don't think government's the solution, the end-all, be-all to everything. That there's something going on in the culture that is leading to these lackluster results.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think we have demographic issues that play into those types of results, but we're not unusual. I mean, Arkansas has very similar, you know, demographics as far as that kind of thing goes, Mississippi, even Louisiana. And so it's one of those things. Is that something that we use as a crutch? And we're not really giving people the ability to get out of a failing school or out of a bad situation when they have the personal and individual ability to succeed. You know, to me, it's one of those, yeah, there are definitely some demographic problems. And I definitely think that the lack of parental involvement is a problem. The lack of value system in some communities, that education is not seen as a value. But that's not something that Alabama is, you know, exclusively dealing with. And so, you know, part of what we try to do is figure out how other states have successfully addressed those issues and not reinvent the wheel. We're, you know, we love Alabama and I love living here. I love raising my family here, but we're not special. And so we can look to other states and figure out what they're doing right and try to model those same things in the state of Alabama. And that's part of what we're trying to do. I will say this, though, and we haven't talked about this at all on culture wars. because I do think that there are a certain number of parents who want out of the public school system because of the academics. But there's an entirely new constituency of people who are interested in school choice because of gender and racial dynamics and indoctrination practices that are happening in the public school systems. And that's happening in Alabama, too. And so there is an entirely new constituency of parents who are interested in opting out of the public school system because the public school system has not gotten that under control.
Right. It seems like, I mean, the emphasis, and I don't know what goes on behind the closed doors in public schools in Alabama, K through 12, but the emphasis seems to be put on the wrong things, or maybe that's just my perception. I'm totally incorrect. I'm reading this wrong, but we are spending a lot more time on these ancillary issues, right? Like the whatever we would call woke, or you know, the all the quote unquote social issues, but just from the wrong perspective, that's way out of line with the culture in Alabama, and maybe not putting enough emphasis on what's important.
Yeah, and it seems to me like, you know, if you're 48th or 49th, or heck, we were 52nd, which still sounds like a joke to me, in math, then maybe set those things aside. Set the social things aside and say, hey, you know, it doesn't really matter what you're identifying as today. We're going to sit down and identify with geometry. And so I think there are just a lot of parents and a lot of taxpayers in Alabama that want to see the public school system put those things aside and actually focus on the basics. Focus on math, focus on reading, focus on, you know, science, and really focus on the things that kids need to be able to know when they graduate so that they can be successful adults. And I'm not sure that that's happening on a daily basis in our system right now.
All right. Well, we'll figure out the gender pronouns after we do Pythagorean's theorem here, right?
Just that's like, right.
That seems to be something. And I don't know that's not going on, but we'll see. Hey, Stephanie, thank you for your time this morning, and let's talk again soon.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks, Jeff.
All right, guys, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
And watching Captain Kangaroo. Now don't tell me I've nothing to do. It's good to see you, I must go, I know I look a fright. Anyway, my eyes and my ragged rebel flag flies high above it all, popping in the wind like an angry cannonball. Now, walls of history are cold and still, but they still smell the powder burning.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday morning. 251-343-0106. If you want to get in touch with the program, please do so. Let's get through some text. Going to take this segment and probably a little bit of the next. A new texter, although I think the Western Corridor is a nice idea, I vote to spend money on more pressing traffic problem areas. No, I do not agree with spending all of our state money on the Western Corridor. Really, next time you're in traffic on I-65 and somebody puts up a billboard of a construction scene outside of Linden, and this is what they're doing while you sit in traffic. They'll like send out some of these glossy mailers to Ledbetter and Greg Reed's district about I-65 versus 43. I mean, think of the possibilities here. Do you think anybody, I mean, I guess this is the one I'm trying to get at here. What rational human being would think that this is an acceptable policy? This is an acceptable policy approach. Now, she's governor, and she won by a big margin. And I had said this the 2 years leading up to that gubernatorial election, from COVID on, if she doesn't get a challenge, if Governor Ivey doesn't get a challenge in the Republican primary, if she just goes through it unscathed, there is no other possible takeaway from that then it was it is a mandate election, and she's doing what she thinks the voters have told her to do. Now here's the problem: for the future governors is they're going to be tied. Their hands are going to be tied on a because of this project. They're going to be saddled with debt. The next governor probably will is going to be saddled with a lot of problems left over from Ivey, who is going to be the longest consecutive serving governor in Alabama history when it's all said and done. But somehow it's going to leave behind a bunch of unsolved problems. I mean, it just seems like there was blown opportunity after blown opportunity after blown opportunity on the prisons. And it's going to be blown opportunity after blown opportunity on the I-10 Bay Bridge and I-65. 251-343-0106. Hit us up on that text line. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.
From Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between, an insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday morning. Hour number three now officially underway. 251-343-0106. Chris Elliott, state senator from Josephine, represents the southern portion, majority of the southern portion of Baldwin County, coming up in about a half hour from now, or as I like to call him, our returning champion. So you want to stay tuned from that. A lot of high drama yesterday and what is known as contract review. So there's like a committee. I got to be honest. There was a lot of empty seats at this committee meeting, but they meet every month. And the power they have is they're able to put a pause on contracts. It's called contract review, and it's how the executive branch is doing business, and they got questions about how the money is being spent. I mean, the thing is, once the legislature authorizes the expenditure, the executive branch has broad discretion as to how they're going to go about spending it, what vendors and who and how and so on and so forth. And this committee meets every month and they go through the big state contracts and, you know, they typically approve them. Well, yesterday, and Tom was telling us this at this point when they were talking about the West Alabama corridor, a lot of empty seats there. It was Senator Elliott, I think Chris England, a good friend, Dan Roberts. I mean, some of these guys, I would be like, if you are going to be on this committee, then show up. And just that was a little disappointing, but our stick around for the entire show. So there's a hold on what is called an engineering contract for the West Alabama corridor. Now here's what some of you, I know we got some engineers out there that listen to this program. 75 miles of road, an engineering contract for $75 million. Does this seem reasonable for the road, the engineering cost to be just the engineering cost? No gravel, no pavement, no site work, no line striping, no signs, none of that. Just to put the project on paper, just the schematics, $1 million a mile. I mean, you want to talk about inflation and the cost of construction goods and labor and services, et cetera. That's one thing. Should engineering costs be this inflationary as well? Anyway, we'll get into that in about a half hour, and there's a lot to talk about. Anyway, so that's coming up on the program. Let's see what we got here. Unnamed texter. You would not have died had you not gotten the jab. Drink the Kool-Aid, buddy. So why did Elliot vote for then? What do you mean? My question was, like, Ricky kept predicting my demise for getting the COVID vaccine. And my whole point was, why haven't I demised yet? I don't. I'm not drinking any Kool-Aid. I'm just pointing out some empirical data for you that the statement was we're all going to die from the COVID vaccine. Well, despite that advice, despite that prophecy, I went and got the COVID vaccine, and I am sitting here before you right now, just pinch myself to make sure I'm not dreaming. Doing a radio show, still alive and kicking. So when is my pending doom for taking the vaccine? Anybody? I'm not telling you should take it or shouldn't take it. I just want to know when I'm going to die. That's all I'm asking. Is that reasonable? Well, somebody just tell me, hey, yeah, you're going to kick the bucket suit. Should I start writing a will? What's going on here? Dirt Digger, Jeff, I believe we need the new road so when we start winding I-65, you can't use 43. I live up 43. It's a mess because of all the traffic going up to the new steel mill in Calvert. It needs to be three lanes to that exchange. We're begging for business to move here, but don't have good infrastructure, putting a cart before the horses. Here's a question for you, West Alabama Corridor guys. Are the other portions of the road, already four-lane portions, able to handle an increase in traffic? If the prophecies, using that word a lot today, if the prognostications are true, that this will take traffic away from 65, and people will suddenly start saying, hey, I don't want to go through Montgomery today. I'm going to opt to go through Thomasville when I'm driving from Birmingham and Points North to Mobile. If that is indeed going to be the case, guys, you get to Thomasville, Alabama. Have you ever driven through there? I mean, it's kind of, it's got some strip malls and a lot of red lights. Are they going to be able to handle that traffic? That's probably would be the only place I would be concerned. Maybe I don't know what the route's going to look like between Moundville and Thomasville. I don't think it's not going through any municipalities. If they are, they're very small. But is it going to be able to, that portion as you're speaking of, Dirt Digger? Are they going to, this new influx of traffic, is it going to be ready for that? Tim writes this, Jeff, I think they're holding on to that gas tax money. Gary, good morning, Jeff. Good morning, Gary. Happy Friday. I'm going to throw you a curveball here as a straight ticket Republican. I despise our current man in office. I'm not even going to say his name, but he needs to go. He is worthless, and I think it's time for Harris to take over. LOL, I cringe at that thought. The United States would see then how the Democrats are totally running this country, or ruining this country, and we would win hands down if Harris was in office. Trump, God willing, would be a total landslide. I don't know. Kamala Harris on paper is a Democrat dream. She is African-American female from California. And she hasn't been that impressive, but she still could be a historic figure. Biden's just another old white guy who can't find his way from the podium to the door. I don't know I think I like my chances, even though neither are really stellar. I like Trump's chances against Biden a lot better than I would against Kamala Harris. Sean writes, teachers are getting up there with the TikTok nurses as far as how much praise they get for really doing nothing. I mean, it's a hard job, but here's what I hate about like singling out one profession and saying that it's we need to appreciate it more, or we need to give it more support. I mean, not that all professions are equal, but everybody has challenges in their occupation. And nobody's out there saying, "Hey, the B-rated radio hosts who have other jobs need to have our praise." I get it. I mean, this is a totally different sort of job here, but there are challenges to every job. And teachers or nurses or whatever, yeah, they perform an essential function, a very important function. But your point is like, okay, you are being paid to do a job. You have this contract. Why should you be put on a pedestal? Why should you be put on a tier higher than everybody else who just has an accountant job or a secretary job or truck driver job? You get it? Well, we do that a lot. Good morning, Jeff. Good morning, unnamed texter. It's time to redefine the education or the learning system in the state of Alabama. Once a kid makes it through the 10th grade, they should be able to have the last 2 years to continue their academic education or choose a trade. Well, don't they do that already? We did that when I was in high school. Some will continue through grade 12, and some will choose a trade. This will make Alabama much stronger in the state. The education system, there will also be a rise in academics and a rise in trade workers. It's a win-win. I think they do a little bit of that. Now, maybe not everywhere. I mean, obviously, if you live in some place where like a single A school, like in Sweetwater, Alabama, I mean, you can't have a bunch of teachers with so few students. You can't have all these programs, but maybe you can do it somewhere more centralized. But that was it. Like when I was in high school, long, long time ago, in Shelby County, Alabama, some of the students, when they got to school, they headed to the trade school, which was, we were in school in Pelham, and then the trade school was down in Columbiana. And they took the bus down to Columbiana, and they did this. They were doing a little bit of this already. But who knows? Like, here's a problem with that, unnamed texter. What 11th grader knows what they want to do with their life, be it go to college or go choose a trade? Like, I always wonder that, like, I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life till I was, like, in my 30s. Or late 20s, I guess, is when I kind of came around to this occupation, mid to late 20s. But still, I mean, I don't know. I guess if you want to do that, but I do think you ought to have the option open if you do want to go to college. Or if you do want to go learn a trade. We're like way overthinking some of this education stuff sometimes. How about this? How about we just teach you to learn to read and write, and then you figure it out from there? Unnamed texter, Jeff, government, I have been censured for the way this shut this state down. Governor Ivey should have been censured the way she shut the state down during COVID. Including churches. We tried to censure her, but writers did not want that. If you do not have the mandate, you need to get out. I don't know what you're... I guess I get the from context clues here that Governor Ivey not being held accountable for what happened during COVID. Something tells me that Kay Ivey was way too deferential to Scott Harris. Way too deferential. Tyler, Good teachers should be put on a pedestal. They work before and after school and spend their own money to make students feel good. College education required, and they make $50,000 a year. Well, why don't we, instead of having, here's the problem with the union scale of wages, that every teacher gets some kind of, there ought to be more merit in the system. So the good teachers ought to be paid more. The bad teachers, sure, they can keep their job and it can make it hard to fire, but maybe they shouldn't be paid more. Maybe they shouldn't get these across-the-board raises. All right, we got to get a break here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Gone with the wind. There ain't nobody looking back again. Hello, Kansas. Sweet Bill Palmer, let me thank you for your time. You work a 40-hour week for a living. Just to send it on down the line. Hello, West Virginia coal miner, let me thank you for your time.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday morning. Friday. It's finally Friday. Monday we'll be here before you know it. And Monday we are already planning a radio show. So Monday should be back in the home base. We'll have State Representative Jennifer Fiddler in studio and some guy named Dale Jackson, a lunatic with a radio show in Huntsville that I'm going to start saying it this way, that I like to have on these airways for my own amusement, because that's typically what it's been lately. Watch Dale say something ridiculous and me be like, all right, whatever. But that being said, that's coming up on Monday's program. In the meantime, I still got some time in here if you need to get in to the program, 251-343-0106. That's how you do so. I tell you, and I mentioned this to kick out the program, so if you're listening, but the Biden administration is going to, it sounds like, is flirting with the idea of implementing a remain in Texas policy. What's going on there? I mean, this would be just so, would be bad for Texas, but it would just illustrate the problems with everything the Biden administration has done philosophically on the issue of immigration. We don't have to remain in Mexico. That's racist, but remain in Texas is fine. So that being right there at the border on the Rio Grande, you want to keep us from crossing there? Well, you're just a bigoted racist hater or whatever. Don't you dare cross that Red River or we're going to I don't know what you're going to do. What happens if you violate the remain in Texas policy? What are they going to do if somehow said illegal immigrant gets on a bus and goes to Chicago and defies the remain in Texas policy? What do you think is going to? Maybe that's the trick. Or are they just going to detain bus drivers? I mean, what if I get on, I cross illegally and then I go rent a car at Avis and I drive to Oklahoma? No, but what's going on there is that the policy is having a negative impact on blue cities. I mean, do you want to stay in some border town in Texas? If you crossed here, if you came all the way from Honduras, if you came all the way from Honduras to the United States, are you going to be hanging out in Del Rio or Laredo? Are you going to see the big city bright lights of Times Square? Well, it turns out a lot of people are doing exactly that. The appeal of America is a lot of things, and it just so happens it's not going to be Eagle Pass, Texas, and they're going on, and they're being enabled in some ways by the local governors, the governments in Texas, and this is what the Biden administration is trying to crack down on. And this is their policy prescription. We'll just create a remain in Texas policy. Don't you dare go north of Amarillo. Hey, are they going to build a wall there around Texas? They're going to make Wichita Falls the new border town. No, but anyway, I'm obviously joking, but that is, that appears to be what the Biden administration is contemplating. Look, the little story on Alejandro Mayorkas, though, I mean, like, he has long been a, he's been on the, where most of us are, on the opposite side of the immigration issue. And when Biden named him DHS secretary, this was just everything Trump did was bad, and we're just going to reverse it. There's nothing redeeming about the Trump administration in their mind. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
On a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, and no one could change my mind, but Mama tried.